everybody, and welcome to an episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I am speaking to Miranda Hitchcock. Miranda began volunteering in animal shelters when she was younger, and it actually inspired her to change her initial career path, and she began working in animal welfare with a focus on behavior for years. And in that time, she approached and saw many challenges that the people and the animals in her community were experiencing. The amazing thing about Miranda is she identified these patterns and ways that she could help on a bigger level and started an amazing nonprofit called Every Dog Behavior and Training. You guys do not want to miss this awesome interview. I hope you enjoy. Miranda, I'm so stoked to have you here today. And you guys missed it, but I just saw her adorable dog on the Zoom. And now that's all I'm thinking about. But I'm so happy you're here. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and my dog, Nina.
Oh, she's so cute. This is the cool thing about Zoom. I get to meet everyone's animals because that does not always happen. And it makes me happy. So you have a long history of working in behavior. And I'm sure all of the people that listen to this podcast know it's kind of my jam. I love everything and highlighting all the amazing people. But I know Miranda through social media. She started and works at an organization that I love and their mission statement, which we'll talk more about. So, of course, I had to have her on the podcast to talk about it, but also to share her path and how it influenced and inspired her to start said organization. So to get started, I figured you could just introduce yourself to the listeners and say a little bit about your career path. I know you have your master's in applied animal behavior and more. So what kind of led you down that path? We all have those origin stories. I like to think of myself as a superhero. So I'm calling them origin stories instead of career paths because I think that sounds more fun and language matters. So can you share your origin story?
Yeah, absolutely. So my origin story, I did not have the dog with behavior issues that I think so many folks have when they entered the industry. I actually grew up with cats. I never had a dog growing up. And when I was in my early and mid 20s, I started volunteering at an animal shelter. I knew nothing. I became a dog walker at the shelter. Aww. And I very quickly went down the rabbit hole. I have always loved problem solving. I have a degree in engineering and just love knowing how things work, how to make them work better. And so I very quickly got involved more in the shelter world, in my hometown, walking dogs, and happened to be in a place where we had some great behavior professionals on the team there. And so I was just very lucky that from the beginning, I started learning a lot of the right things. There was not a whole lot to undo because I didn't have any real history with dogs. And so it was easy for me to start learning new things. And I just got more and more wrapped up into it, worked at a shelter in Maryland, and then came out to Austin to work in sheltering out here. I became a professional dog trainer, got certified, and had volunteered with a nonprofit in the DC area called Your Dog's Friend, which is awesome. Did some training for a private training organization doing puppy classes and things like that. And then I just really kind of leaned into shelter world when I got out here. I did that for a few years and then burnt out pretty hardcore and decided that I wanted to kind of take a stab at things from a different angle. So I know we'll talk about that in a little bit, but for me, my training journey really went through, looking at basic manners and puppy classes. I still love teaching puppy kindergarten classes. I just think it's so fun. They're so cute. And there's so much you can do at that age that really helps them later on in life. But just got more interested in behavior in part because I was in a shelter atmosphere. And so those were a lot of the dogs that we were dealing with. I was overseeing our behavior team. So just gained a lot of knowledge and skills around that. And it just kind of happened to be where I went. So I went through two different behavior consultant certification processes and then went back to get my master's in part because I wanted to be able to have that academic knowledge and also the academic credential so that when there were folks who said, well, you're just a trainer, right? Like, how do I know you really know your stuff? So having the master's degree was sort of an attempt to go after some of that credibility, which, you know, I think has its place, but maybe not all of the places. I got to do some original research around behavioral euthanasia, which I'm hoping to get published this year. So just lots of different things, but I'm a big fan of all things training and behavior, but know nothing about the fun stuff. So people will ask me, like, we're taking agility lessons, my dog and I, and we're not great at it. Anything where people are teaching fun tricks or sports, anything like that, I'm just so enamored with, because my whole job is just how to get the dog to stop biting people or biting other dogs. So I don't really get to do some of the fun stuff, but that's kind of the trajectory that my career has taken. I'm not taking as many behavior cases now because I'm running the nonprofit more often, but I still do take cases here and there, and I love it.
So how you have a degree in engineering, she's a genius, everybody. It's interesting because I'm a technician, like a vet tech, and that's a very science, math heavy field. Math is not my strong suit. But being a vet tech and the problem solving aspect is great, but engineering brains are even, I always like, I love my brain, guys, love who you are. But I'm always like, I really want to have an engineer brain because my husband has one of those. Again, that's a label, but you guys can understand what I'm getting at. And the way that his brain works is different than mine. And I'm just like, I'm so enamored with, I think engineering, you're probably like, hey, I'm here to talk about behavior. But engineering is so cool to me.
Well, and it's a lot of the same thing. So yeah. I think the thing that I always tell people is I almost double majored in a design a major in the liberal arts. And really what I wanted to do was design a major that said, here's how everything works so that I can make it work better.
I
like to know how everything works. And I like to be in the middle of complex problems. I knew even then I didn't focus on like electrical engineering or architectural engineering. I was in a spot where I was able to go pretty interdisciplinary. And so for me, it's really like, okay, when you're in these complex systems, as we often are in the real world, how do we work with the right people? How do we collect the right information? How do we try to make the best sustainable solutions? And so I think a lot of that has less to do with the technology, right? Like, yes, I'm good at math. Yes, I'm good at certain parts of science. No biology. There's a reason I'm not a vet if it's biology. But, you know, I think there's this element of problem solving and also of systems thinking that's really important to me. So yes, there's a lot of this that I get to do with behavior consulting, but part of it really comes back to why I'm running a nonprofit, which has to do with looking at a system, you know, looking at our animal welfare space, looking at pet ownership space and behavior and saying, what are the gaps? How do we fill them? How do we do this in a way that is sustainable and works and is ethical? And that these are really fun, challenging problems. So it's just a different area to be doing that from.
Yeah, I think you're the first person I've met that has a degree in both things. And thankfully, as I have worked in the field, because I think we're very similar in the point, it just took me longer to get there, where there are a lot of different challenges as someone that works in animal welfare and vet med and works in behavior. There's a lot of significant challenges as far as how we treat humans in animal welfare, but also how we treat animals in animal welfare and vet med for that matter. And thankfully, there are, just like when we're getting data on a behavior patient, there are patterns. And the patterns are very, interestingly enough, I was just talking about this yesterday, the patterns are very prevalent. Yet, unfortunately, I am seeing that maybe as a whole field, we aren't necessarily assessing or addressing those. And then we're not using that data to improve. That doesn't mean there aren't amazing people. I mean, as a field, I don't feel like we're doing that. So I think seeing where the gaps are, because, for example, I make a lot of free cat content, and not that you're valuable, guys, everybody, your services are valuable, but I see huge gaps in things, and I'm like, this is what I have control over, because I'm not great at everything by any means, but I know this skill, and how can I use what I know to improve the world to be the place I want it to be for humans and animals? And I think that is exactly what you have done, and continue to do, which is why I was like, I already know I love this lady. So I think that utilizing, now you're making me feel like I do have an engineer brain. See, guys, don't underwhelm yourselves. You're amazing. On that note, it seems like you went into engineering probably with not the intention of working where you are now. And
not exactly.
Yeah, you met some animals. You had those experiences. It sounds like you had some wonderful mentors, which is just, it warms my heart to hear that, because it's such a powerful and amazing thing to hear. But also, obviously, it influenced your career and inspired you to be the person you are today. But when it came to working in shelters, because you've had a variety of titles in shelter settings, can you just talk a little bit more about that? Because volunteering is so important. Walking dogs is so important. I mean, there's so many things. Everybody is so important in a shelter setting. But could you elaborate a little bit more about not necessarily every shelter you worked at, because I love that you've been at various places, but a little bit more about your experiences and how those experiences reflected to what the nonprofit you start, essentially the nonprofit you
started. Yeah, absolutely. So again, started as a volunteer dog walker, kind of drank the Kool-Aid about behavior and how fun it is. And, you know, learned some stuff about running play groups and even did some old safer evaluations and, you know, learned a bunch of different stuff that, you know, maybe I would not do the same way today that I did back then. But just was starting to learn a lot and wanted to get involved in sheltering. And I actually entered in from a technology standpoint where the shelter I was working with was using a software system and just struggling a lot with it. And it's a very common system. And we were able to make a bunch of changes to try and make things easier for staff. So I did that. I did a bunch of marketing and social media and stuff like that. I then went out to Austin and was in more of a leadership role, helped run a pop-up shelter after Hurricane Harvey, and then was an operations manager at a large municipal shelter out here, overseeing our animal care, our vet staff, and our behavior team. So I did a bunch of things in different places at a variety of levels in a variety of aspects. And that really worked for me in terms of, I like knowing that little bit of everything, right? I like seeing the whole big system and trying to move pieces where I can. I think where the nonprofit came in was a couple of places. And one of them was that we see a lot of the same dogs come in, right? And we see this with cats too, where a lot of the dogs that we get in, it's like, man, if I'd gotten to you 1 month ago, you would not have bitten the person and then been surrendered.
Right.
Or you see this dog that is like a male 1 year old, over aroused, jumpy, mouthy, gets in the fights in play groups because he can't contain his excitement. And it's like, man, if I'd been able to work with you at 8 weeks old and, you know, get you into a puppy kindergarten, are there pieces of this that we could have helped your family manage? Right. There are so many of these dogs where by the time they hit the shelter, it's like, oh, we could have prevented this. But once these things happen, it's really expensive and it's time consuming and the prognosis is not always easy. Like, it's just so much harder to fix it once it's a problem. So that was one big piece. And the other big piece was just the lack of resources that we saw in the community. And so this was something where I think for me, there are two big pieces. One of them was finances and one of them was race and language, where not only did we have folks who said, I can't afford training, but we also saw folks come in where they're like, I don't get access to resources, right? I'm being discriminated against from adoptions because I'm not white, or I don't have access to anything because I'm a Spanish speaker and nobody on your behavior team, you know, one person in your animal care staff speaks Spanish and nobody right. can explain to me what's going on or what to do about it. And so that's a place where it's just, it's bullshit. Like, it's absolute bullshit.
Yeah, for sure.
Things don't exist. So I was really, really lucky that, Michelle, my partner now, she was on the behavior team with me and she had heard me talk about some different ideas. And she was like, we should just start a nonprofit. So thank goodness for the best work wife I could ever have asked for. But we decided to start the nonprofit together. And at the time, I think, you know, I wasn't convinced that we could do this, right? Like, I was very hesitant in the beginning, especially coming out of animal welfare and being really burnt out. But, you know, we're here 3.5 years later and, you know, making a significant difference in the lives of people and pets here in Austin. So I think that was really the big piece for us, was saying, just like you said, you know, there are these gaps that you're trying to fill. And for us, it was like, we want to get prevention and we want to get access for everyone, because it shouldn't be that only, you know, middle and upper class white cisgender folks get access to training, right? These should be things that are accessible for everybody, and they're just not. So what can we do about it?
Love it. And I do think, of course, finances do play a big part in that, but there are ways to create resources and content, and whether it's a lecture, a webinar, a 5-minute YouTube video, a handout, I think sometimes we can even get ourselves, because I've been there and I'm sure you've been there and I'm sure many of my listeners have been there, where you just kind of have a learned helplessness kind of mentality, especially when you're working in these fields. But the good news is there are small things where you could take your skill set, find others that are amazing,
yep,
that have skill sets, and create things that really make a huge difference. And in your brain, you're like, this is so challenging. This is not doable. I have learned helplessness. There's no way. And then the more you do it, which I'm sure you've had that experience as well, because yep, I have, where I create a resource or a video, or I do a in-person lecture to a local shelter, but it's free for the general public. And you see these seeds that you plant, and then 5 years later, people running into you and telling you these like beautiful, just heartwarming, reinforcing stories. So I am so thankful that you, even though you were burnt out in a weird mental space, you still chose to try a new thing.
I credit Michelle with that. Totally. The joke that we talk about is that when we first started and we bought our URL, the everydogaustin.org, we had the opportunity to buy it for 1 year or for 2 years. And I was like, let's just buy it for 1 year. I don't know if we're going to be around that long. And Michelle makes fun of me now, because it was, you know, I just didn't want to spend extra money on it. And I was very just, you know,
I understand, down, yeah,
and feeling like things didn't work because I was so frustrated in shelter land. And now I feel like we're certainly still way in the beginning stages of what we hope to be able to do in the future, but it's very cool to be able to impact change pretty swiftly because of who we are and because of the type of organization we're running, that like I could not have done in a shelter system for a variety of reasons. So it's been an interesting few years for sure.
It has flown by, I'm sure. Because yes, this is currently, so her lovely organization, and what was your co-founder's name? Michelle?
Michelle.
Her and Michelle, both amazing people. Mm-hmm. I'll have to talk to her too.
Yeah.
Started an organization called Every Dog Behavior and Training. And she is based in Austin, Texas. And it is an amazing organization. And that's actually how I was familiar with the organization, but not Miranda necessarily. And we were talking before the podcast and saying, when you find your people... The power, like, again, Miranda's amazing as a single person, like the things she's capable of doing, her credentials, her experience, her education. But when we get a lot of us working together, which now Every Dog has how many trainers?
Oh, gosh.
I was looking at the website. I'm like, yeah, this is so impressive.
I'd have to count. I think we have 3 full-time trainers, and then we've got like 6 or 7 contractors who do
amazing,
different mix of training and classes and stuff for us.
And you do tons of one-off, like where you have a guest speaker come in. It's just, it's beautiful. Yeah. I love it so much. So on that kind of note, could you tell me and the listeners a little bit more about what services you offer, and a little bit more about the resources you provide? Because all of you amazing people out there, they have a lot of great resources. I refer to it a lot.
So
you guys can use these, not in Austin too.
Exactly. So we're located in Austin, Texas. We do both private training and group classes. So right now, all of our group classes are on site. We do a lot of training here. We do also do virtual training. One of the things that's been really exciting, especially in the last year, is that we have a separation anxiety trainer who is taking a lot of cases where, again, if you have, you know, financial need, like it's expensive to get good quality care, as it should be, right? You know, we've talked about this, like it is important for people who are doing a good job and who have a high level of expertise to be paid for it. We just need to develop systems that allow folks to still access it. 100%. So, you know, we're excited to do everything from like, hey, potty training my puppy, all the way up through like, you know, inner dog aggression cases, human aggression cases, the gamut. So we do all of that and we offer financial assistance on everything we do. It is no questions asked. You give us your name and your email and you get an automatic list of all of the discounts. If you need more than what's existing in that sheet, you tell us what you can afford and we make it work. And so that's been really kind of a core tenet of what we do, is making sure that everyone is able to get it despite financial resources. And that's been really important. We've had clients that we work with who say, you know, we've been working together for months and they lose their job and they say, hey, I'm going to have to stop training. And we go, well, you don't, you know, can you, right, can you pay us $20 a session instead? Right. Can we find something else instead? And that has made a huge difference for a lot of folks. So we do our private training and our group classes. We offer our free webinars. Those are usually once or twice a month, and they feature local experts, national experts, international experts. It's a total wide variety of different topics. So, you know, whether people are interested in dog sports or reactivity. And one of the things that we're really excited about is that last year, with some grant funding, we started doing a BIPOC speaker series. You know, we know that in the animal welfare space, for example, in animal sheltering, it's like 84% of employees are white. And that is not necessarily what our overall population looks like, which makes it harder for people to decide to get involved in these spaces. Dog training is relatively similar. And so it's important for us that BIPOC voices are represented, that when people are watching webinars, they're going, oh, like I look like this person, I can be a trainer too. So that's been really fun to have a paid BIPOC speaker series so that we can also pay those experts for their time. We also offer veterinary behavior financial assistance. We've got an awesome vet behaviorist here in Austin. And so when we have clients that need to see a vet behaviorist and cannot afford it, we cover that cost. So that's been really exciting. We also have classes in Spanish and are starting to build more of our kind of repertoire and resources around Spanish. We've got a free resource library on our website that's hopefully going to get updated soon with lots more resources and things like that. We have a referral list for, as far as I'm aware, every positive reinforcement-based trainer in the Austin area who is appropriately certified and taking new clients. So we're trying to make sure that people have access to the resources they need, whether or not that's with us. And then we also work with local shelters and rescues. So right now I have spots in classes for shelter dogs. So we have shelter dogs coming out to us every week. Sometimes it's for a specific shelter dog enrichment class. Sometimes they're just coming to join a confidence building class or a basic manners class, which is great for time out of the shelter and also for volunteers and fosters getting to learn new skills. So lots of cool stuff. And this is where I will add the plug that we are a 501c3 nonprofit, which means you can donate to us. And that is how we make all of these programs happen. But yeah, it's been really fun. And as we go, we can, you know, add new things in there. So for example, last year we had Cassidy Jones do a webinar for us about the history of race and dogs in the United States. And that's something that, you know, it's not specific to dog training, but it is very important for the world that we live in. And we recently had a webinar series about trauma that was geared towards animal welfare professionals, because we are often exposed to bites, fights, scary things, all kinds of other things, and we don't get the treatment for it. So it's been fun as a nonprofit to add in more and more pieces, kind of like seeking our tendrils into the community and offering more resources where we can. You know, our webinars, we have people coming from all over the world to attend them. And so it's been really fun to see all the different folks who come back to us, all the folks who are able to benefit from these resources. And there's just more to come.
I'm so excited. And Cassidy is amazing. I will She's be so great. Sharing her. I'm working on getting her on the podcast. Schedules are mental, but she is amazing. I will share her resources and all the resources that Miranda is mentioning, because I just happened to come across Cassidy and her resources are just mind blowing and amazing. And she's wonderful. But I think all of those resources and things that you're offering are so needed, and it's very practical to have. I don't think people understand, again, the power of a webinar or the power of seeing a person that looks like them presenting on a said topic. So there are small things really, right, in the kind of from an organizational standpoint, but the reach and the power that you are doing is just overwhelming. And so everyone out there who's working to change the world, there are little things that you can realistically do and it can make a humongous difference. Because I think we've all felt like what we were kind of touching on earlier, and you used all your trauma.
Yep.
I'm just being, you know, we yep. have fun here to create, just like I've used a lot of the experiences that I went through. I don't want others to go through that. So I'm doing what I can to prevent that from happening. And in many cases, like you mentioned, that one-year-old dog that you talked about, that one-year-old pit bull who's in a state of heightened arousal chronically due to lack of mental stimulation. And I'm not saying that we all know behavior is complex and it's not that simple, but sometimes it is. Sometimes
it's like, does he need some enrichment? Can we get him some enrichment? Can he go attend a group training class and we see what he's really like? Or one of my staff members says she has a dog who's coming from the shelter to confidence building class every week, and she just sleeps in class because it's quiet, right? Aww. Like,
it's just a safe, quiet space to get away. Yeah.
Simple things can make big solutions.
I love it. And you mentioned that you were a 501c3. Wait, that's it.
501c3. I know. It's all the
I know all the numbers.
They go in some order. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Miranda's so kind. She's like, it's okay. You're tired.
It's like, are you a CBCC or a CDBC? Are you the other CBCC with the KA? All the things.
All the letters. I know there needs to be a handout on that. And even that, like, if let's say you are a veterinary technician out there or you're working at an animal shelter, something that I started doing, and I didn't necessarily think of it, but doing the research and meeting trainers, seeing how they train, seeing what they're comfortable with. Because again, you know, there's a difference between a trainer and behavior consultant. This behavior consultant might not want to fucking touch separation anxiety, and I respect that. This behavior consultant might be comfortable with inner dog aggression. This one might not be. So, and understanding their experience, credentials, meeting them, and then creating a easy, accessible list. It is something that I have done for vet clinics for a long time, and it hurts my heart, but safe place here at Tales from a Vet Tech. I used to Google trainers as a vet tech. It makes me very upset to this day, because I'm not going to cry. But I wasn't a bad technician. I just didn't know. So now I have made a point to, because ideally, yes, as a veterinary technician, a veterinarian, you should be, real talk though, creating relationships with behavior consultants and trainers and BBs in your area. That is a crucial thing that you should be doing. But also I recognize that due to a variety of contexts and things that may not happen. So I love that you mentioned that, again, a very simple thing. We're already out here as behavior professionals. It's important for us to play nice. There's enough behavior for all of us, guys.
Plenty.
There's more than enough. So I always try to connect with new trainers and behavior consultants, like across the country, but especially locally. So you can do that, build up your rapport with them, but also get this referral list. And then if it's just all the things you mentioned, I love so much. So I just have to elaborate them on them more, because I don't think people understand the true power of, from a positive aspect of all these things. But you mentioned you were a nonprofit. So when it does, because it's on everyone's mind, so we're going to ask her, when it comes to funding, what has that looked like for your organization? And you may not feel it, but I have seen it. You have grown significantly, very impressively over the last. You have grown. This is my first time officially meeting Miranda. We know each other through social, and I love her already again. But I've seen how large this org has grown, and it's just brought me so much joy. How has that kind of been, and how has funding, creating all these projects, like, how has that been for you and Michelle?
Yeah, it's a wild journey. I was just starting to post, and we're actually doing a fundraiser right now, if you happen to be listening to this in, you know, when it comes out. We are halfway through 2023, and we have already spent more money on most of our core programs than we did in all of 2022.
Oh my gosh.
And that was the case last year and the year before. So it's just, we're growing so rapidly because there's so much of a need in the community. One of the things is that we We're able to fund a lot of what we do through the proceeds from our full price training services. And so that's something that I like to let folks know is like, if you choose to come to puppy kindergarten with us and pay full price, or do, you know, behavior consulting and pay full price, you are helping people to get access to resources, right? So it's not like a one-to-one Tom's model, but every time we get someone who pays full price, we're able to take a portion of those proceeds and put it towards the different programs that we run. We've also been super lucky to have a lot of really generous donors from all over the world who are seeing what we're doing, whether they're interested in supporting financial assistance or our shelter dog programs or our webinars. And then we were really lucky. Maddie's fund was super generous and gave us a grant in 2021 and 2022 that allowed us to jumpstart some of our programs. We're looking at future grant funding from a variety of different organizations, both in the animal welfare space and in also spaces like, you know, human health and well-being, equity, you know, advancement of different populations. So there's a lot of stuff that we're looking for in the future. So if you happen to have a bunch of money sitting around and you don't know what to do with it, we're happy to talk to you.
Only have a little bit of money, but multiple of us, they are always accepting donations on their website, which I'll be sharing, but also they have a lot of amazing webinars. Like every webinar that happens to come up, because I'm sure I don't see some because of algorithms, but they're all, I'm like, oh, this looks awesome. This looks awesome. This looks awesome. So they offer webinars all the time. And then also I'm sure you guys have, like you mentioned, specific fundraising events and like online fundraising.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of fun stuff, lots of ways to get involved. We're really excited about it. We're getting more volunteers involved. We're doing also, I forgot to mention this before, but one of our sort of core programs has to do with our community building and mentorship and helping new people become trainers and helping new people become behavior consultants. Unfortunately, I don't have a way really to do that virtually. I've had a number of folks recently who are like, I need to shadow someone. And I'm like, you're in a different state. But, you know, that's been really important to us. Cause like you said, you know, there's lots of support that we need. We are only seeing an increasing need for help. And so we have a vested interest in helping other people learn and grow. And all of that is based on, you know, whether we have the donations to run different programs. And you're right. Like, absolutely. If someone has $1 million they want to give to us, like, please.
I second that.
$5. Yeah. If you have $5, I always tell people like, yeah, you know, a training consult could be anywhere from like $100 to $150. But like that one moment where they realize it's not their fault that their dog is reactive, that's like, you know, a $5 12-second moment that's like a total epiphany, or, you know, $5 can cover that one moment where they realize the strategy that's going to really help their dog with their behavior issues or build a stronger bond with their dog. And so like, yeah, $5 is not going to cover the cost of an entire consult, but it could make the difference between somebody getting help or not. And so, you know, any amount really does make a difference for the variety of programs that we're able to support.
And it plays a huge part in, again, thankfully, I feel animal welfare is progressing to understand the importance of this. It's a process, but I like to focus on the positive. Mm-hmm. But animal retention is really what our goal should be as animal welfare professionals. And it's interesting because I have a lot of people reach out to me regarding learning more about behavior. I get to meet so many, I love all of you, so many animal welfare professionals speaking and consulting, and they reach out and they're like, I'd love to start this program. And it's interesting because the more and more I've consulted and spoke with different people, I learned from those experiences. So I've changed my responses up a bit. Of course, every person based on their individual, what's going on. But now one of the things I always ask is, what does support look like in your shelter? Because it's not something I used to ask. I used to just share things and I'm super happy to help and mentor you. And I still do that to the best of my ability because I am one person. I'm doing my best. But I also understand that I need to set realistic expectations for them. And I don't think I was always doing that because in some contexts, if you have no support, like, for example, I had this amazing person reach out and wanted to do kindergarten, which is life skills, like essentially life saving. Puppy socialization and kitten socialization are essentially, yeah, life saving things that are needs, but we're not there. So I really wanted to help her and support her, but I was like, I can't just give you a handout. That's this is a lot more complex than that. And I asked her about support, and then it hurt my heart a little bit what she said, but it's a very real thing that I hear a lot. And I'm sure you did too, where she essentially said they really can't invest in behavior because it's not that important. And it obviously it hurts me a lot because that was like 6 months ago. And I, again, that person doesn't believe that, but that's such a common narrative. And it's so interesting because behavior is everything. Like, yeah. People are relinquishing their animals due to, even if it's not, if they're not clearly saying what it is, because in many cases, caregivers aren't being honest and transparent for a variety of reasons. And we all need to work on communication skills across the board to be better and help each other. But it could be something as simple as, I mean, I do free consults for a few shelters right after they're adopted, if they want to like relinquish them within 30 days. And more than half the calls are people who just misunderstood and are creating narratives that the animal hates them and the animal's acting normally. And they just needed a professional to tell them that.
Yep.
So I went on a little spiel. This is what I do.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's really huge too. So, you know, we are not in a consulting basis, and I'm always very clear, especially for my own mental health, that like we set a hard boundary where
boundaries.
Our model is community-based. It's not shelter-based, right? We are very much like the primary thing that we're looking to do is support our community. However, it's like, I'm already running classes. I can bring shelter dogs classes, right? So it's like, 100%. Where can I fit our shelter folks into our model, but knowing that still our model is fundamentally community-based. But one of the things that I promise when I work with our shelter partners is I'm like, I have been in your shoes. I know what it's like to have someone say, hey, can you do one more thing, when you already feel like I cannot do the things I am already expected to do. Right. And so the promise that I make to them, that I tell them, is I'm like, if this is going to mean more work on your plate, we will not do it. If I can do this in a way that either takes work off your plate or gives you a different benefit without more work on your plate, then we'll do it. But I'm very cognizant that like, if going to class means that you're going to have to screen a bunch of people and you're going to have to build a process and you're going to have to do this, it will not happen because you don't have the time to do that. And I respect you enough to know that. And so one of the things that's really important to us, and it's the same when we work with families, where it's like, yeah, you could spend 6 hours training this dog to do these things, but it's like, can we buy you a baby gate? Because that might be the thing that we need to do instead, because you don't have those resources, right?
What can you do? Instead of saying,
it's the same as
do this, as, what can you do?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, vet techs and vets, same as in shelter world, they're like, well, I can't slow down. Like, this dog is going to bite me and I have 12 other clients I have to get to in the next however many hours. And it's like, okay, how can we find things that you can do that feel like they take something off your plate instead of adding more to it? Because you can't do the one more thing. Like, it's not a thing. So we try to be very thoughtful about that and find programs that allow people to feel that little bit of relief versus that little bit of panic. And it doesn't always happen, but that has definitely dictated how we work with, you know, our shelter partners moving forward. And especially, you know, also with like our vet behaviorist, trying to make sure that it's very easy for her team and our team to know, okay, we're sending you clients. Here's how the communication will work. We want to be an organization that people want to work with. And so that means thinking really critically about how we can make the ecosystem better for them, whether it's another trainer, vet behaviorist, veterinarians, shelter folks, whoever it is.
And I think it's really helpful that you, even when starting your organization, I don't even have to ask you, I know you've done this, but obviously as we've been talking, you had, because we all want to do everything that is not practical, that is actually, it makes us do less. All of these things that have been talked about numerous times, but I understand it's easier said than done. But you were very clear with your mission, which is so important. Very clear with your mission, very clear with your boundaries, very clear with your criteria, which, yeah, that was probably a pain in the ass to create and start, but the amount of ease and comfort and that has allowed you to grow as a group and to not have it be, we're doing so many things that we're doing all the things 25%, or my whole staff is burnt out now. Well, fuck. So I just want to like praise you for that, because it's very apparent that you were considering all of that. Cause I think sometimes we're like, we just need to get all of it done. We need to do all these things. And then we're so overwhelmed that we're actually making our job harder and we're taking longer with each animal. When if I would have just created some SOPs, talked to the staff, had a plan, this all would be a lot easier.
Yeah. That is the engineering thing, right? It's a strategic thing.
See, it keeps coming up.
So where I started with engineering was I was really looking at like humanitarian engineering and sustainability engineering. And I took a class where we learned about a story where these engineers wanted to get running water to this, you know, village somewhere that didn't have access to running water. They were having to walk like a mile and a half to go get it from a river and carrying it and running into all these other problems. And so the people, you know, they did a design, they figured out how deep the water was. They built a well, they built, you know, the pump mechanism, they got everything installed. They, you know, washed their hands. They said, we figured everything out. And then they left and they came back 6 months later. And the thing was like rusted over and no one was using it. And what they found out was that all of the like dating and courtship happened down at the river while you were getting water, and nobody wanted to like flirt with somebody in the middle of town at this new water pump. And so culturally, it just wasn't a good fit, right? So, and this is always the thing for me about engineering and problem solving is it's not just about technology. It's about like, does this system work? Like that was not a system that worked. And so they had problems with it, right? People didn't consider the right voices. They didn't think all the way around this problem that they were trying to solve. And so that's really something that we try to do is figure out like, what can we do right now, right? What can we do a year from now? And what will it take to get there? And there are some times where I'm like, okay, I want to do this trauma webinar series. It doesn't entirely fit into our plan, but I can do it and it's easy. Like we agree to do it. But there's a lot of this stuff where it's like just having to put the blinders on and be like, someone else is responsible for this other piece. Here is what I am responsible for. And that way we can actually make differences as we go.
And then also thinking about, because again, I think this is a common thing with nonprofits where not only do we make it more challenging for us running the nonprofit, but people maybe they think more in the moment and they're not thinking like long term. For example, we did not consider funds or lodging, or now we have, you know, 50 dogs in one space. And now there's a lot of ethical issues for the humans that are involved with having to see that or live in that or whatever that may be. But also obviously the animals, it's a slippery slope. So I think it's just, I feel like we should be treating animal related nonprofits similar to how businesses do. But for some reason there does tend to be a humongous disconnect. So a lot of nonprofits can't thrive, or they're struggling with, they're maybe okay in the now, but they're utilizing maybe a lot of emotional manipulation. And I mean this in the kindest way, but emotionally manipulating someone to adopt an animal. I am aware that I am extra sensitive to it because of my backgrounds, and everyone's experiences are different, but I have been emotionally manipulated in really horrible ways where people would tell me that they would hurt and harm animals. And understandably, that is very challenging. And I'm sure many of you have that experience, but because of those experiences, I have learned coping mechanisms and ways to handle those that are more effective and healthier for me and the person that maybe, to be fair, in some contexts is they are struggling and don't know how else to ask for help. So they're panicking and treating us like that. I'm not justifying it, but I do think it's important. Again, I'm getting all emotional now, but when it comes to these nonprofits, it's just something I commonly see. We need to think before in the moment, but also ahead. And you guys are just doing that so beautifully. And it makes me so happy.
Yep. It is written into our core values that we want to be a good organization to work for and with, because it is
for and with humans matter.
Yeah. Like it's our employees, it's our volunteers, it's our board, it's our clients, it's our community partners, it's our shelters. Like we actively, you know, there are a lot of folks who are like, well, you know, I care more about dogs than people. And like, so what if my books aren't together? And like, we'll figure it out. And for us, it's like, we want to be an organization that people can't wait to work with because we have our shit together. Like that is a goal for us. We do not, spoiler alert, we do not always have our shit together. Nobody does, but we are consistently trying to have our shit together. And I think that that's really important.
And I can 100% agree. I do not have my shit together in some of the time.
Can you imagine?
But I am doing the best of my ability to get my shit together, and I am not ignoring the shit I don't have together. Yep. I am working on problem solving a plan for the shit I don't have together.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, that's, I think, and that's where owning a nonprofit or a business or any of those things, you really need to, or even if you're someone working in an area, those are good things to ask in an interview process. What is your mission? What are your core values? And if they just look blank, which unfortunately may happen, that's data for you yep. to take in. Especially with the jobs that we're working in, like vet med and animal welfare, there's a lot of ethical things. There's a lot of trigger stacking and things that even when you're working for the best people, there are a lot of other factors that can contribute to some mental health issues or ethical challenges. So I think that's a great thing to say, hey, what's your mission statement? What are your core values? And is it a generic, like, again, it's not a black and white thing, but it's just helpful to give you more data. So the fact that, again, I'm very impressed by your organization and how you've done everything. And I think it's a great template and like for other, see, now you're going to have to do a webinar on how to start organizations.
Yeah.
That so needs to happen. Actually, oh,
I know we were going to talk later. I'm going to preempt you a little bit. We were going to talk later about like the one piece of advice for people. Yes. Spoiler alert, I'm going to give you three pieces of advice because I am incapable of listening to instructions. So I get people fairly frequently who reach out and they're like, I want to start something like what you're doing, or I'm really interested in like, how do I provide these resources? Right. Cause we're really one of like a couple of organizations trying to do something in the same space even. And amongst those organizations, like we're all doing very different things. So my hope is that there will be more opportunities to take some of these things as we find out what works and put them into other places. But there are three main things that I give as advice when folks are looking out and wanting to provide resources. The first and foremost is find out what your niche is and what you're good at, because I have people that are like, I am a dog trainer and I really love it. And I really want to offer, you know, I want to develop like a whole behavior nonprofit, like what you're doing. And I'm like, okay, cool. How's your strategic planning skills? And they're like, they're not great. And I'm like, do you have a partner? No. Are you great with finances? No. Are you independently wealthy? No. Like, do you love talking to people more than you love working with dogs? No. And I'm like, well, then you don't want to start a nonprofit. Right. So there's a lot of these places where I think sometimes there's this pressure to do all the things and be all of the things when right. often I'm like, well, do you have local behavior consultants that you could create a partnership with, right? Like, is there a local Friends of, or does the shelter have resources so that you could set up a voucher program with that person? Are you able to work by providing, you know, pro bono sessions in a certain thing or offering a certain number of sliding scale sessions? Are you someone who's really great with technology who could help make the software system run better so that frees up 2 hours of time from the behavior team so that they don't have to enter behavior notes for 16 hours a day, right? So I think that's one of the biggest pieces is instead of trying to do what I'm doing or what someone else is doing, figuring out how you can do the piece you're good at. Just like I absolutely 100% would not be doing this if it were not for Michelle Mendoza. And she 100% would not be doing this if it were not for me, because we have different skill sets. So that's one piece. The second piece is recognize that trauma is a thing and that it is likely impacting you. Compassion fatigue is not the only mental health thing that we see in the animal welfare world. And if you are seeing bites, fights, euthanasias, people screaming at you, all these other things, and you are really struggling with your mental health, there's a good chance that what you are facing is not compassion fatigue. There is a good chance that what you are facing is trauma and PTSD. And I highly recommend getting resources. We recently did a webinar series about this because it's something that I find really important. But we, in this space, we are exposed to a lot of trauma and moral injury and told to do things that we don't believe in. And all of that can really cripple your ability to do things. And so in order for you to be able to do all the cool stuff you want to do, recognizing trauma and being aware of treatment is important. And then the third piece is there's this phrase in the back of my mind, which is always what happens when they leave you. So when I was in animal welfare and learning about sort of the history of adoption policies and how a lot of it was like, if you don't have a fence, if you don't have this, if you don't work a certain job or have this much money, we won't adopt to you. And I was fortunate enough to have folks who were like, well, okay, here's the thing. Like, if we say no to this person, will they still get a dog? Because usually the answer is yes, right? So like if my organization says, no, we're not going to give you a dog because you don't have a 6-foot fence, they're going to get it somewhere else. If my organization says no, because you're going to put a shock collar on the dog, or no, because you don't have enough money, or no, because you previously surrendered a dog, they're going to go get a dog somewhere else, but they're not going to have the same resources that we can offer, right? And so from a sheltering perspective, this was like, can we find a yes? Can we offer them the support that they're going to need? And so that's something that we really live with here, where, you know, unless someone is, you know, verbally abusive or highly inappropriate with us, like, we don't fire people because we disagree with the choices they make with their pets. Because for us, it's like, the decision is not like they do it or they don't. The decision is, are we there to help them or are they solo? Right. So there are a lot of these places where it's thinking about, you know, if you say you're not going to work with someone because you don't like them, it's not like they stop existing. They're still there with all of those same problems. I would rather have them continue to do things that I dislike, but I can maybe influence some of it, right? And this is not to say don't set personal boundaries. Everybody needs to have personal boundaries. But I think as an organization, taking the stance of, we would rather people have support, even if it's not perfect, versus just shutting a door, because that doesn't mean they stop existing. That doesn't mean that dog stops existing. We would rather have them get some help than no help, because they're going to be out there with a dog regardless of what we do. So I think those are really the three pieces that for anyone who's like, oh gosh, I want to make a difference. It's find your spot, find the thing that you are uniquely good at and capable of, make sure that you're taking care of your mental health and being aware of trauma in your day-to-day life. And then just really think about what happens when they leave you and who you're having leave you, and whether they're getting resources somewhere else, and whether it's better for them to still get whatever they can from you, even if it's not perfect.
I think those are beautiful pieces of advice. And then how you mentioned, even if it's not perfect, you may not be able to answer everything. Let's say you continue to see the same. That's essentially part of why I create certain lectures or certain resources or even a podcast episode. I'm like, this keeps coming up. Yep. This keeps coming up. This keeps coming up. Okay, this is data. And when it comes to medicine or behavior, or honestly, everything, working with clients, telling a potential adopter no, I think it's important to think of things from like a triaging aspect. Yep. Because we can't do everything, and there are priorities, and triaging is something that I do in the vet world that I've transferred over to the behavior world that I now transfer over to. It's a process. I'm working on it with my yep. like own life. Mm-hmm. But it has been a really powerful tool, because right away, your emotional, which your emotions are appropriate, feel them. But also, if you're over threshold, you can't, it's just challenging. Yep. So it allows you to kind of step back and triage and say, okay, I can't do this. This is a yes. This is a yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to tell this, I'm going to communicate with this person in this way. And I may not be able to help them with this, but I did it in a way that was effective. I provided them to the resource, even if it's just a website. I gave them something.
Yep.
And they may now, I have so many stories, I'm sure you do too, where something like that was done, and then the person, now they come back to volunteer, they come back to foster, they start to donate, and you're building that community, and connection is everything. So those were beautiful pieces of advice. I feel like I could just hear Miranda talk all day.
I have purple hair. The listeners can't tell, but I have purple hair, and I feel like that automatically sometimes makes things sound smarter. So if you're listening and you're like, that doesn't sound all that smart, just imagine me with purple hair. It'll make it better.
It's long, luscious. It's purple and it's tints like of blue.
It does. There's pinks and blues in there.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. The pinks. See, yeah. Mm-hmm. Both of us, self-care is important. And for us, we color our hair and it makes us happy.
Yep. Arts and crafts.
Mm-hmm. I do think I bring a lot of people joy, because I have so many fun conversations with seniors about my hair, and then we end up talking for 20 minutes and it's a riot.
That's great.
I love my connections. So you've given so much amazing information. Definitely. Now I'm going to talk to you after, because I have some ideas. See, we work together. We talked about the importance of finding colleagues and other professionals who usually become your friends, and where you have the same niches and ideas, but also have different experiences and skill sets and working together. And I'm already thinking of things that I want to propose to Miranda.
Ready.
Yes, I'm excited. But I know everybody out there loves behavior and understands the importance of it, or they may not, and that's okay too, but they might be open to learning because that's all we can ask of people, which is amazing. So when it comes to behavior resources, there are so many great behavior resources out there. What are a few that you would recommend to animal welfare professionals, vet med professionals, and the general public as well to find more information about behavior? Of course, your beautiful website, which will be in the show notes, and the donation link.
Yes.
Buy Miranda a coffee, which actually will, I love that, that story that you, where you're like $5 for.
Yeah.
I you mean, need to record that in like a TikTok, or I'm not on TikTok, but you need to.
It makes such a huge difference for people.
Oh, beautiful.
So if you're looking for behavior resources, especially if you're looking for low cost or free behavior resources. So there's a ton of stuff on our website. You can see all of our previous recordings. They're also on YouTube. You can see our upcoming webinars. Like there's a fun upcoming one I'm going to be doing about muzzle training, which I love.
Favorite.
All the things about muzzles. So lots of upcoming webinars. And then again, we do have that resource list. If you are a dog pro and you're like, I love these resources, feel free to send them to me and I can add them to the list. Especially if they're from BIPOC behavior experts, I would love to make sure that our list continues to stay representative. So lots of great resources there. I can also recommend Your Dog's Friend, which is in Rockville, Maryland. They are one of the reasons why this nonprofit exists. I so value the time that I volunteered there when I was early in my career. And they have also a huge free webinar library and lots of resources on their website. So tons of great places out there. I think a lot of it is also, what are you interested in, right? So, you know, we were talking before about how not every trainer or behavior consultant is going to have the same skills or the same qualifications. I do not know how to train your service dog. I don't have the faintest idea, but your service dog trainer might not know what to do if your dog is biting people. And so I think, you know, if you're looking for basic manner stuff, or if you're looking for dog sports stuff, there's tons of great things. If you're interested in finding some awesome BIPOC trainers and behavior consultants, again, you can go through our speaker series and maybe hire one of those folks. A lot of them are taking private clients and some of them do it virtually all over the world. So some really excellent people that you can look to find resources all over the place.
So thank you so much for chatting. I'm so glad that we got to connect, and I will most likely have Miranda back. So if there is a question or more information that you would like based on what you heard today, don't hesitate to reach out on Facebook, Instagram, via email. You can find that all in the show notes. But I like to always ask my guests too at the end, just what is something that currently makes you happy? This can be a work-related item or not, since having hobbies outside of work is crucial. But currently today, what is something that makes you happy?
I have become a houseplant person.
Oh,
and
snap.
It makes me happy because they're green things and they grow, but also it makes me happy because I get to learn new things. And so I, much like in behavior, like I just didn't know anything. And so I got really used to learning new things pretty quickly. A friend of mine gave me a pothos plant like 10 years ago. And it's like, pothos are the easiest things to take care of. They don't require a lot.
So I need to get one. Good to know.
Yeah. They're amazing. So I had it forever. I like gained a couple more. I started getting more plants, and then I had some plants that just weren't really doing well. And, my boyfriend was like, well, how often do you fertilize them? And I was like, I'm sorry, what? So I learned that like, I've been starving my plants for a decade, and it's just that some of them are super resilient, but like, you're supposed to feed your plants. Like, of course it makes sense. Like if you repot them, they get nutrients, but like for a lot of plants, they need actual nutrients in the soil. And it's just one of those things, like having a dog for forever and never thinking about like, well, they might need mental enrichment, right? Like there's so many of these things where we work with clients to have these aha moments all the time where you're like, you don't have to take your dog for a walk if every walk is like a disaster because of reactivity. Like, just do other things. And so now I'm like, I can feed my darn plants and they don't, the ones that were dying are no longer dying. And it's just like, I got to learn a new thing and master a new skill. And so I think it helps me remember that learning new stuff is fun and it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm terrible because I didn't know the thing. So having a new hobby is a great way to learn new things and transfer that knowledge back into your day to day and be like, sometimes I'm going to be wrong or I won't know something. And that's okay. And also my plants are cute. They're very pretty.
What's your favorite plant? Oh, that's, I know. I don't want you to have to pick.
I don't know. And also I don't know the names of a lot of them, but I do have this one, which I like because it's spotty.
Oh, it's so
and it's
pretty.
One of the ones that was definitely dying until I started fertilizing it. And now it's like super happy. And I'm like, oh, it's a miracle. If you feed the things you take care of, they won't die.
That's why learning is so fun. Cause I think we've all, whether it's like vet bed behavior, life, like we all have those moments where it's like, once you learn it, you're like, fucking duh.
You're like, what? I wasn't feeding them. They were
and then you just, it's, you feel like lighter in that moment. Yeah. And it's like this weird, what's the word I'm thinking of? Serotonin, like up.
Yeah.
Way better than a social media hit. I'm just
it gives me so much serotonin. I love my plants.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for everything you do. Everyone, please check out Every Dog Behavior and Training and give them the monies. If it's
and come to a webinar, share us, even if you don't have money to give right now.
Yes. Because I don't think a lot of people know about you.
Yeah. And if you need help and you don't have a lot of monies, reach out to us, right? You know, we're, again, like I am not going to come to your place in Michigan or in California to do in-person training with you. But like, if you need help and you're struggling, we will try and help you find the resources.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What a great interview. I love that Miranda identified those gaps and used her skill set to fill those, but also found others to help her start that amazing nonprofit. Be sure to check out Every Dog Behavior and Training. Donate, share, let others know about this awesome nonprofit. Have a wonderful day, everybody.